Welcome to the third episode of Beaver Sound's mini-series for Pride Month. In this episode, I'm talking to Dr. Gillian Murphy, the Curator for Equality, Rights, and Citizenship at the LSE Library, about the Hall Carpenter Archives. 50 years ago, the Gay Liberation Front met here for the first time, and since then, its impact on gay rights movements in the UK has been profound. For this episode, I'm your presenter, Angbina Boss. First off, tell me a little bit about your time at LSE and what you do.
Okay, so I joined LSE in 2013 when the Women's Library was transferred to LSE Library. So I had been an archivist at the Women's Library, and then I moved to LSE Library. And then I was more involved with the outward-facing work of being an archivist at LSE Library. And then I was given this title, Curator of Equality, Rights and Citizenship. And I basically look after the Women's Library collection and the Hall Carpenter Archive. The type of work that I do is putting on exhibitions, because we have a library gallery in the library, at the entrance to the library. And I also give talks about the collections, and I write papers, and I also put on mini displays for lots of groups who want to look at the collection, so very sort of dedicated tours of the collection. And there's also a lot of answering inquiries about the collection.
And I think those sort of exhibitions in the LSE Library, well, for me personally, I think that was my first sort of exposure to the history at LSE. Especially, I still remember last year, the mini exhibition about like the women's rights movement and gay liberation at LSE, which was in part the inspiration for this episode as well. So what do the Hall Carpenter Archives tell us about the GLF and the work that it did?
Okay, so the Hall Carpenter Archives are a large LGBT collection, and they contain the archives of activists and organisations that campaigned for LGBT rights. So we also have LGBT journals and ephemera, so lots of leaflets and pamphlets. So the Gay Liberation Front is one of those groups. And we also hold the papers of many activists who were active in GLF. So people like John Chesterman, Rupert Beach, Michael Brown, Martin Corbett, Lisa Power, Mary McIntosh. There's lots of them. That's just a few of them. So the archives, the type of archives that you find lots of leaflets about meetings, tickets for discos, drafts of the manifesto, notes about meetings, photographs of their marches or photographs of sort of gay days, that I used to call them, leaflets for plays, GLF diaries, so a list of activities that were going to happen per week. And you also see campaigning papers to do with trying to bring around equality in the law. So that's the type of material we get. It's quite a lot of ephemera, I would say.
That's very interesting. I think in some ways, the ephemera is really key in sort of giving us an idea of what the day-to-day was like. And I think that has some really valuable insights to offer when it comes to thinking about, you know, how those movements worked in the past.
It was all about coming together. It was about being open and meeting people. And that was something that LGBT people before 1970, they weren't really able to do. They had a double life, really. And GLF provided this space, I suppose, for LGBT people to get together. And that you see that a lot in the literature, come together, all power to oppress people. These sort of slogans are very common on the leaflets.
And do the archives reflect some of the challenges that the GLF had or may have had? And, you know, what can they tell us about the sort of obstacles that were in their path whilst organizing at that time?
Yeah, so a lot of the leaflets are sort of list their demands. And if you read them, so quite early on in late 1970, GLF drew up a list of demands, and they are very informative about the way they saw society and about the way that they wanted things to change. They wanted to change society's attitude towards them. They also wanted to change the law, which was very discriminatory at this time. So the first demand is, and I'll read it out because I've got it in front of me, is that all discrimination against gay people, male and female, by the law, by employers, and by society at large should end. And there, and some of the other demands are quite basic demands, that they wanted to be able to hold hands in public, which was something that they weren't able to do without getting abuse. And also they wanted to be accepted for who they were. So another demand was that all people who feel attracted to a member of their own sex should show feelings, should know such feelings are good and right. Because at this time, there was a lot of shame around being an LGBT person.
And in what ways was the GLF inclusive for other marginalized groups, such as, you know, BME, gay people, trans people at the time?
Okay, so in 1970, they used the term gay, which as an inclusive term, and it was a term that included LGB and T people. They didn't distinguish between what you were or how you saw yourself. Everyone was gay. And very early on, they came up with a slogan, "Gay is good," which was revolutionary at the time. And it was about being proud of who you were and not hiding and coming out. So the women in GLF, there were women in GLF, but they were a minority group, and they found it very difficult to get their voices heard. So I'm not able to say anything more about trans people or bisexual people. They were there, but I don't know what their experience was like, because it's not really in the archive.
Okay, all right. I was wondering that to a certain extent. And I think it's interesting that you talk about how the GLF attempted to be as inclusive as it could be, considering, you know, more recently debates about trans people have become such a huge part of the public discourse. And you see this sort of splintering between people who, you know, consider themselves the LGB alliance, and then more trans affirming groups. And it's interesting to me how, you know, this sort of change has happened over time.
They didn't really, I don't think they really saw it like that. They were a group on together. They did split. It was a short-lived group. You know, it's the early 70s. Although they are still going in a way today. But that early activity was in the early 70s. Yeah, they did fracture. There were factions within the group about the way that they should do things, because there was no hierarchy, and they didn't want that. That was something they really didn't want. It was a very grassroots organisation. And there were lots of different groups actually within GLF, which dealt with different aspects of campaigning. So you'd have one group that was for the youth, there was a youth group. There was a street theatre group. There was the media group, which put together, come together, which was their newspaper, which is how they got their ideas out. There was the manifesto group. There was a counter psychiatry group. And one of the big features of GLF was their think-ins, where anyone could speak. So big meetings would be broken down into smaller meetings, and it was a place for anyone to discuss anything, because everybody's opinion was valid. So in that way, they were very inclusive. But I think it was difficult over time. It was difficult for people to get their voices heard. The women in particular felt that was difficult. And then they broke away eventually.
Were there any sort of women-specific groups?
There was a women's group as well, yeah.
Okay, I see. That's interesting. I actually didn't know that there were so many sort of smaller groups that were part of the GLF. And I think it makes sense that it would sort of start falling apart a little bit, because with that sort of inclusive structure, you know, that's great. But also I think sometimes it can be a little difficult to center all of these very different groups with different focuses into one sort of cohesive movement.
Yeah, you get the similar sort of thing happening in the women's liberation movement as well. And if they were going along together at the same time. So one of the things with the women's liberation movement was there was no hierarchy there either. There was lots of grassroots groups around the country. That was one of the things that they rejected, hierarchy. And again, there it was difficult for them. That wasn't a coherent movement either. So different groups would take on different aspects of the campaigns. So you'd get one that was campaigning against abortion, campaigning for abortion, or campaigning for equal pay. You know, there'd be all these different groups that would do different things. So, yeah.
And I'm sure they work together quite a bit as well. And this must be quite documented, quite well documented.
Yeah, there's a lot of overlap between gay liberation and women's liberation movement, because they were both oppressed groups, I suppose. So one example is the Miss World demonstration, 1970-1971, GLF, some of the street theatre group campaigned outside the Royal Albert Hall, which is where the Miss World was taking place. And they had their own misused outside the Royal Albert Hall. So, yeah, that's one overlap, yeah. Yeah, they and a lot of the women who were in GLF then moved across to the Women's Liberation Movement. Although they found that hard as well, because they also found that they were an invisible group in the women's liberation movement as well. So, yeah, lesbians, you know, have a hard time.
That's interesting to think about. And I think something else that I was sort of thinking about when I was thinking about how these two movements were happening at the same time, as well as like sort of there was an overlap between them. I was wondering, in what ways do you think that the activism of the GLF has had an influence on LSE and liberation movements at large in the UK?
Well, GLF was very influential. I think it showed how things could be done if you came together. And a lot of the people, some of the people in GLF went on to found other groups. So you get Icebreakers, Gay Icebreakers, that was founded by GLF people. Gay News was founded by GLF people. Switchboard as well. So these were all organisations that were needed to help support GLF, to support LGBT people. So counselling, and Icebreakers is a group to help you find someone, a dating agency, I suppose.
Yeah, definitely. And I think we're really lucky to have those archives still with us after all these years as well, because I think they can give us a real insight into like histories that tend to be really overlooked. And that sort of leads to my final question of what does the preservation of LGBT history through the work done at the archives here mean to you? And what do you think is the significance of creating these spaces for marginalized histories?
But it's very important to preserve history, and particularly of groups that are minority groups, because without the preservation of their archives, you won't know anything about them in the future. So if we didn't have all this ephemera from GLF, we wouldn't know how they felt and how they wanted to change society. So in the same way with other groups. So at the moment, I'm just thinking about the archives of older women or older lesbians. This is an area that we have hardly anything in the archive about them. We do have Older Lesbian magazine, I think. But that's an example of a group that I would like to collect more material about, because I think that they they're overlooked. That's an example of a particular group that's overlooked anyway. There are lots of others. So at LSE Library, we have a collecting policy that is about, it has to be, the group or the organisation has to show activism and about changing society or about changing the law. So it has to come within that remit. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, definitely. That does. But no, I agree. I think in the case of sort of LGBT history, it's especially important in a sense because, you know, with the AIDS crisis in the 80s, you have a whole sort of generation lost and certain histories that, you know, you can't really ever get back in a sense.
That's right. That's right. Because once the archives are gone, you can't. Yeah, that's it. Yeah. So you have to be thinking what you want to collect and collecting it as it's happening, because archives are raw history in a sense. They record an event at a certain time, and it's only when you look back that you interpret it. That's what historians do. They interpret history. But archives are the raw face of history. So, yeah, it's very important to try and get those groups that you want to collect when they actually have their archives before they, you know, destroy them without knowing. Yeah.
Absolutely. So thank you so much for digging out the time for this.
Thank you for listening. And we hope you enjoyed this episode. In this episode, I spoke to Dr. Gillian Murphy, the curator at the LSE Library for Rights, Equality, and Citizenship. I'm your host, Angbeen Abbas. The music for this episode was recorded by Anybody. That's Anybody with Two Y's. If you want to hear more from us, subscribe to us on Spotify.